Hey everybody, Brian McClanahan here. The woke madness in history education is off the rails. Well, how do we change it? McClanahanacademy.com. And because you listen to this podcast, if you use the coupon code PODCAST at checkout, you get 25% off every day, all day, 365 days a year on every class at McClanahanacademy.com. So go to McClanahanacademy.com, use coupon code PODCAST at checkout, and get a real history education at 25% off. If you like this podcast and you want it without advertisements, head over to patreon.com and become a member of the Brian McClanahan Show. For $10 a month, you get all the podcasts ad-free, including video, and you also get a special Q&A podcast. I'm only going to answer your questions, your listener-generated episodes, through those Q&A. So, head over to patreon.com. Get this podcast ad-free, no ads, not even things like this, and you really do help support the Brian McClanahan Show with really cool stuff on the back end. If you like this podcast, don't forget to follow me on social media. Find me on Twitter, now X, at Brian McClanahan, also on Facebook, at Brian McClanahan, and on YouTube, where you can watch the podcast, at Brian McClanahan. It's a great time. I'd love to see you there. What if no candidate gets 270 Electoral College votes in the 2024 election? This actually proves that the states are the building block of the federal union and the compact fact of the Constitution. I'll talk about that on this episode of the Brian McClanahan Show.
It's time to think locally and act locally. Welcome to the Brian McClanahan Show.
Welcome back to the Brian McClanahan Show. Glad to be back on the program. Very glad to be here. All right, well, let's talk about the 2024 election and the compact fact of the Constitution. Now, you're probably thinking to yourself, well, how does that matter? How does the 2024 election, or any election for that matter, prove that we have a compact fact? Well, the devil's in the details, right? The dirty little secret, which this piece at the Hill actually tells you, and the horror of it all. I mean, it's just the way that this is portrayed shows you that we have a compact between states. Now, we all know, if you listen to this show, that Article 7 of the Constitution makes this clear. It's a constitution between the states, so ratifying the same. It doesn't say anything about the people ratifying the same or some amorphous mass of American citizens. It's very clear it's a constitution between states. Now, the people, of course, are the sovereign entities of the states, and the people of the states made the Constitution. I mean, the states didn't do it without the people thereof. This is another question about sovereignty. The general government can never have sovereignty. It's kind of a stupid thing to even suggest that, because that government can't really do anything without permission from some other entity. And it's true. I mean, look, if you think about the general government this way, the Senate, which is the state representation in the entire system, has complete control over the Constitution, over the government. It has confirmation power when it comes to any appointments from the executive branch. It's a check on the House of Representatives, which you could say is kind of the only nationalist part of the document, because you have this mass of individuals. However, each one of those people is elected in the states by districts devised by the states, not the center. So we have certainly a state check on the entire system. So they check the judiciary, they check the executive branch, they can check the legislative branch. I mean, they are really the most powerful entity. So we know that the federal government in its structure is checked by the states. It can't do anything. It's a government. When people say that, for example, those who advocated secession or those who actually did secede committed treason against what? Against a government that had no sovereignty? They aren't subjects, they're citizens. If you say that they committed treason, then they're subjects of something. And as we know in the American political order, the people of the states are sovereign. You can't divide it out. This is something that I've talked about last week. You can't divide out sovereignty. So you either have it or you don't. And the states didn't lose it because they delegated certain powers to the center. The people of the states didn't lose it because they did that. And they didn't lose it because they denied themselves the ability to do a few things. Now, as you go back through the ratification process and you read some of the arguments for the Constitution, you'll see that there is this kind of this message ingrained in these. Well, you know, we're going to get, this is Madison's dual sovereignty, we're going to get some things where the states don't have as much, they surrender some sovereignty, they do, but again, this is garbage. It doesn't work that way. As Calhoun and others in the South pointed out when you got to the middle of the 19th century, you can't have it. It's a Frankenstein that won't work. Either the center is sovereign or the states are sovereign. And clearly, according to the historic record, the center can never be sovereign because the states can abolish the entire thing. A sovereign entity cannot be abolished by anything else unless you have a revolution. I mean, you think about France. The king could have never been done away with unless there was a revolution, and that revolution took power and beheaded the king. But you also think about France, and that unitary system never really went away. They got rid of Louis XVI. They had this terrorist organization, the Committee of Public Safety. They were eventually done away with by the Directory, and then, of course, you get Napoleon. And once Napoleon's gone, you get a return of the kings. When the kings try to shade too much back into divine right, well, you get a people's king. And then you get an emperor. And even when that's gone and you get the republic, France is still a unitary state. We just now have the mass of people in France dictating the rest. But the smaller components in France, what we would call the counties or the cities, those things have no control. Or what we might even look at as states, they have no control. They can't block anything. In the United States system, though, they can. And even if you think about the British model, what is the threat to the king? Well, the parliament. But there aren't any states, really, in Great Britain that would be similar to what we have in the United States. There aren't any co-equal legislatures in Great Britain. There's nothing there that's in the same kind of structure that we have in the U.S. The only thing that would be similar would be something like Switzerland, or maybe the old German Confederacy. I mean, that would be the most similar thing. You have these very powerful legislative bodies that can check the center. They can do it without Congress. They can call a convention and abolish the entire government. Now, how is that government sovereign again if it can be abolished by the states? It's not. It has no sovereignty. It has nothing but what's given to it. And this particular point proves it. The presidential election. You might be thinking, how does that work? Well, because if no one gets 270 electoral college votes, the states get to pick the president in Congress. The states get to pick the president. Now, I've talked about this before on this show, but I want to hammer this home. We're just a few months out now. We're about, you know, what, 6 months, 7 months from the election. It's going to be here before we know it. And this is going to be a big deal because, of course, a lot of people are sour on both Trump and Biden. And then you've got RFK, who might actually be able to make some headway. I'm not so certain he's going to get any electoral college votes. I mean, if you look at things, if he was able to pick off a state or two, it could really matter. Maybe he picks off a big state and no one gets 270 electoral college votes. I'm not so certain Kennedy can pull that off. Ross Perot couldn't even pull it off. The last person to do it, as the piece points out, was George Wallace, and even that didn't affect the Electoral College in a way that would prevent one of the major candidates from being elected. But regardless, this is something that these people, Douglas MacKinnon, who is a neocon, a Straussian, I mean, this is what he is. He worries about this, wrings his hand. He's kind of a never-Trumper, you know, rings his hands over this. Oh, no, what happens if we don't have the will of the people? The dirty little secret is that the presidential election was never the will of the people. That only came about because they started showing what the popular vote was. And then only in 1824, we had several elections. 1788, 1792, 1796, 1800, 1804, 1808, 1812, 1816, 1820. We had 9 presidential elections where no one had a clue how the popular vote went. Interestingly enough, that's the 9 elections where the founding generation was on the ballot. What happens in 1824? You get the second generation of Americans, and there's no argument that John Quincy Adams or Andrew Jackson were members of the founding generation. They were just kids, teenagers during the war. What do you get? Well, you get the popular vote. And of course, Jackson is going to use that to his advantage in saying, hey, I won the popular vote. I should be president. There might have been something to that. But regardless, this is when you get it. And this is when we have to talk about these things, right? So from that point forward, we start looking at the popular vote. And now you have all the clamming of the National Popular Vote Initiative, which I blasted in my Founding Fathers Guide to the Constitution. It's a disaster. That thing would be an absolute disaster. Because the Electoral College was supposed to be the check on popular democracy. And if that didn't work, the states would get to pick the president and the vice president as well. That's the other thing. The states get to pick. They get to pick the vice president because the Senate chooses. They get to pick the president and the House of Representatives. And the way it happens there is so cool. And look, again, it shows you that the founding generation did not trust majoritarian democracy, and they thought the states were really the building blocks of the entire system. So let's read this little piece at the Hill. The first line is just absolutely hilarious. If you don't believe the 2024 presidential campaign can get any more bizarre or anxiety-inducing, just wait, yes. I mean, you can just see McKinnon. Oh no, it can get really bad. The anxiety. Oh, I'm just, you know, he's taking anti-anxiety medication because of an election. These people are ridiculous. On the left and the right, so-called right, when they do this kind of stuff. I mean, it doesn't even make any sense. Who sits around worrying about the presidential election in this kind of way? Particularly if you know anything, because it doesn't really matter who wins. You know what I can guarantee? You're going to get more government, more taxes, more regulations. It's all going to happen. You're going to get more lies. You're going to get more centralization of power. All of that's going to happen. So to sit around and wring your hands. Now, what these people believe, what Douglas McKinnon and all kinds of people like him believe, is that who's in office is really going to change things. I mean, Trump would be funnier. The whole thing about Trump making fun of the left is the best part of the presidency. I mean, that's it. But other than that, did anything really change in the 4 years Trump was in office? Did we get any less government? Did we get anything that resembled real federalism? Anything. I mean, you could say COVID actually showed it because states were saying, yeah, we're not doing that to Trump's heavy-handed policies coming from the center. They just didn't do it. And of course, Biden and everyone else recognized later, yeah, the states had to control all this stuff. So maybe that actually made people wake up and say, wait a second here, the states are really still the important part of all this. But regardless, is anything really going to change? The only thing that's going to change the power of the central government is not who's wearing the emperor's cloak in Washington, D.C., but what the states do themselves. So McKinnon says 70% of Americans have indicated that they don't want the major presidential candidates that they now appear stuck with. A substantial percent of Democratic voters and a majority of Republican voters don't want President Biden to run because of his age and perceived cognitive issues. Not perceived, true. I mean, actual cognitive issues. I mean, the man is... Look, this is why the Democrats want him. It doesn't matter what the voters want. It matters what the party elites want. For all the disputes I have of Victor Davis Hanson and all the problems he has with his anti-Southern bias, which is a real issue, he's correct. Somebody sent me a video saying where Hanson's on there saying, you know, the issue with Biden is that he's really not the president Barack Obama is. This is true. Barack Obama and his people are running the show in Washington, D.C. That's not Joe Biden's cabinet. That's not Joe Biden's administration. That's Barack Obama's administration. It's a third Obama term, and Biden is the useful idiot that gets it done. When Biden starts to say things that aren't on the script and Biden might actually say something he believes, he's shut down. Watch. It happens every single time. When Biden goes off script, we're going to stop taking questions, Joe. Come on, Joe. Let's get out of here. Even his wife ushers him around because when Joe Biden gets lost and everything else, they don't know what to do. Biden is simply the guy that wanted to have president stuck on his headstone when he dies. And that became it. It was the deal. Hey, Joe, we're going to make you president. We're going to create the situation where we have all these votes out of thin air. I mean, maybe the people really did vote. I don't know. There's a lot of things that make you question that 2020 election, whether it's, as I've said before on this show many, many times, you're never going to prove any of it. Nixon couldn't even prove it in 1960 when you clearly had dead people voting, that there was enough to overturn the election. And he had a team of lawyers go out there and try to figure this out. There is no way in a COVID shutdown that you're going to prove anything else. There's no way. There's no way. I've said it from the beginning. So the questions are going to remain, and people are going to distrust what happened because they just don't believe that this bumbling fool got all these votes. Particularly when there were more votes cast in 2020 than in 2016. And Trump even had more votes. I mean, how did this happen? So it's really remarkable. These are all the questions. But this guy, this bumbling idiot, there's no reason to think that this person is ever really in control. He's not. Barack Obama is running the show from his basement. From Martha's Vineyard. I mean, that's where he's running the show. And this is what they want. They hope that he can win in 2024 again, because that would be a fourth Obama term. And then you're going to get the fifth and sixth Obama terms with Michelle Obama when she runs in 2024 and wins. I don't care who the Republicans run against her. That person will lose. That person will lose because Americans are that stupid. But regardless, the average American voter won't really care about anything because it's just about, oh, Michelle Obama is cool. You know, see, this is what you're going to get. But Trump would be the last gasp of hilarity, right? He's the last comedian to really be in there. If he can win in 2024, I'm not certain that the system is going to allow it. But regardless, we have this whole thing happening where Trump, the candidate, people don't like it. But the Democratic voters aren't really the issue here. It's the Obamas. It's the establishment. Trump is different in that the Republican establishment doesn't really want him. It's the real issue. The Democratic establishment wants Joe Biden because they can control him. The Obamas, who are the Democratic establishment, want Joe Biden. It doesn't matter what the voters want. But if the voters defect enough and maybe go to someone like RFK, I don't know if they will. Maybe they will. Maybe enough Republicans and Democrats do that. Maybe you get some kind of chaos as McKinnon is wringing his hands over. A substantial number of Republicans and a majority of Democrats don't want former President Trump to run because of his perceived legal issues. Now, again, the legal issues are created. They've been concocted to try to get rid of him. As I've said, I mean, Trump is the problem. He's one of them, but he doesn't act like one of them. And they can't stand it. He's exposed them, so they got to get rid of him. Next, still in media enforced stealth mode, but coming up fast in the outside lane, is Robert F. Kennedy Jr., running as an independent. Beyond Kennedy, off in the distance is the specter of a no-labels candidate finally materializing. That's maybe Nikki Haley or somebody else, Joe Manchin. I mean, that could actually happen, too, if you had a centrist candidate. I would love to see all this, by the way. I would love to see a four-horse race for the presidency. It would be absolutely amazing. Let's have it. I mean, let's have a debate stage with Trump and Biden. Biden would be useless. Trump would be funny. Let's have Nikki Haley back up there, or Joe Manchin. And let's have Robert F. Kennedy. Let's have them all on the stage. Now, what's really interesting about that is I don't think the Republican and Democratic parties would allow it to happen. Remember, they control the debates. They wouldn't allow Kennedy or somebody else, no labels, to be on the stage. you'd have to actually get an independent entity to set up these debates. And I don't think that they would do it. They learned their lesson in 1992. They learned their lesson. Ross Perot made too much noise. As one steps back to study the framework, you step back to study the framework, a natural question starts to come into focus. One that has been asked of me by several major players from both parties over the last few weeks. Yes. Yes. Several major players. Douglas McKinnon. I am so stupid, I don't know what happens if nobody gets 270 electoral college votes. So Douglas McKinnon, this wise, sagacious man, this politico, tell me, Douglas McKinnon, what happens if nobody gets it? We need to know. Several major players rely on Douglas McKinnon to come up with this answer because they just can't look it up themselves. It's almost hilarious. It is hilarious. If these people are major players and they don't know this, my gosh, what does that say about American politics? Lord, what does it say about American politics? This is Calhoun's worst nightmare coming true, right? We have you have majoritarian democracy, and it's disastrous. If you don't think that can happen, you haven't been paying close attention to this eccentric campaign season. Such a nightmare scenario seems almost preordained at this point. Oh no, oh no, he's wringing his hands. You see, he's popping his anti-anxiety pills, worrying about this. In preparation of that looming possibility, here is the answer, as outlined in the National Archives. Got to go to the National Archives to get this. Here it is. Here's the answer. So, no one else could have looked this up. They're just relying on Douglas McKinnon. Quote, if no candidate receives a majority of electoral votes, the presidential election leaves the Electoral College process and moves to Congress. The House of Representatives elects the president from the three presidential candidates who receive the most electoral votes. Each state delegation has one vote, and it is up to the individual states to determine how to vote. Since the District of Columbia is not a state, it has no state delegation in the House and cannot vote. Thank God. A candidate must receive at least 26 votes, a majority of the states, to be elected. So, three top candidates. Each state delegation has one vote, and it is up to the individual states to determine how to vote. Each state gets one vote, and the states, not the House, the states decide how they vote. The Senate elects the vice president from the two vice presidential candidates with the most electoral votes. Each senator casts one vote for vice president. Since the District of Columbia has no senators and is not represented in the vote, a candidate must receive at least 51 votes, a majority of the senators, to be elected. If the House of Representatives fails to elect a president by Inauguration Day, the vice president-elect serves as acting president until the deadlock is resolved in the House. Now, that supposedly is a nightmare scenario. Why is it a nightmare scenario? Well, it's a nightmare scenario because, well, you don't have majoritarian democracy ruling the day anymore. You get the states, the building blocks of the entire system, deciding who is president and vice president. What they miss here, each senator gets one vote. That's still voting by state in many ways, though we'll come down to party at that point. 51 votes. The vice president doesn't get to vote in that. You got to have 51 to 49. Now, if it's 50-50, ooh, that would be the real interesting scenario. Who's going to defect? Who would it be? I think if this actually developed and it was Trump-Biden, okay, because that's who it would come down to, Trump-Biden, and you look at the people that they would pick. It depends on who Trump picks as vice president. Okay. It really does. But I could see a situation where if it's Biden-Harris again, and Kamala Harris is the vice presidential candidate, I could see a situation where enough Republicans would bolt and vote for Kamala Harris, and she would become president-elect for a time, or at least acting president, vice president-elect, acting president. And you could see Donald Trump winning. However, there are 26 states, more Republicans there are more Republican-controlled states than Democrat-controlled states, and those states would decide who's going to vote. And I can almost guarantee you, 26 states would vote for Donald Trump. It's close, but they would get 26. So you wouldn't really have to worry about this. But I could see a situation where Donald Trump becomes president and Kamala Harris is vice president. I could see that situation developing, which would be amazing, right? We wouldn't have had that. We wouldn't have had a situation like that since 1796. That would be actually, I mean, as much as I don't like Kamala Harris from the historical standpoint, this would be really interesting. So then McKinnon says, for the moment, let's assume Biden, Trump, and Kennedy are the three presidential candidates who receive the most electoral votes. Suddenly, the magic number is reduced from 270 electoral votes down to 26 state votes. More than that, a state is no longer duty-bound to vote for the candidate who won that state in the general election. Oh my gosh. The states get to decide. And I'm going to tell you, Kennedy would be shut out. He would be skunked in this scenario. For the sake of argument, let's say that the final stretch of the campaign, where RFK Jr. starts gaining in popularity with more independents, minority voters, and Republicans and Democrats dissatisfied or disgusted by Biden and Trump. Because of that, let's further assume that he wins a respectable number of Electoral College votes. This is a hypothetical that's never going to happen. I mean, look, as much as I like RFK on foreign policy, he's pretty good on that. He's bad on just about everything else. He's really bad on everything else. Impossible, you say, because independent candidates generally tend to flame out toward the end of a campaign as voters flock back to the traditional party on election day. True, but there are noteworthy exceptions. Back in 1992, independent candidate Ross Perot got almost 20% of the vote. While he won no electoral votes, that's important, his impressive showing knocked Bill Clinton's popular vote total down to just 43%. What I find interesting about McKinnon is usually that's seen as Perot was taking away votes from George H.W. Bush. What they found is that was about equal in both. But he didn't get any Electoral College votes, so how would he be the third candidate? There would only have been two, if this is true. And in that case, in that scenario, you're not going to have anything else. As for the last third-party candidate to actually win an Electoral College vote, it was George Wallace in 1968, who won five Southern states and 46 electoral votes as the standard-bearer for the American Independent Party against Republican Richard Nixon and Democrat Hubert Humphrey. Many believe that Wallace took more votes from Nixon than Humphrey, so much so that while Nixon easily bested Humphrey in the Electoral College 301 to 191, he won the popular vote by less than 1%. But again, he still got 270. So what McKinnon is doing is actually undermining his entire argument here, that this is actually going to happen. It could be more possible to happen, not with Kennedy, but with the fact that you could have a scenario where the state split out enough to not have either candidate, Trump or Biden, get 270. And there are some scenarios that could actually happen. Not with a third party, but just because this is the way the Electoral College kind of shakes out. All that to say that a strong third party candidate can easily upend conventional wisdom while creating political intrigue. Could Robert F. Kennedy Jr. match or exceed Wallace's Electoral College vote total? No. And if he managed to pull off such a feat, what would that do to the final electoral vote count? I don't know, but he's not going to pull that off. Look, Wallace, in many ways, is probably the last person to be able to do this because he had such strong support in the South. The American Independent Party is a real populist party. By the way, if you're getting this podcast this week, the week that I'm recording it, which is the week of March 4th, head on over to McClanahan Academy, use the coupon code POPULISM, and purchase that American Populism course, which has a series of lectures on the American Independent Party platform. You're going to want to get that. You get it for $99. Just use the coupon code POPULISM while you're there. $99. This deal only lasts 1 week. After that, it goes up. $99. Get that class. You're going to learn a lot about American populism. Donald Trump, by the way, is often seen as an American populist. I have my reservations about that. He sounds a lot like it, but he really never doesn't really fit the mold. But regardless, George Wallace was an American populist. So get that coupon code POPULISM. Use it right now. Get $100 off that class. You get it for 50% off using the coupon code POPULISM. It's awesome. And I can guarantee you're going to love the class, just like you'll love any class at McClanahan Academy. That said, after the 2020 election, Biden was declared the winner of the Electoral College, with 306 votes to Trump's 232. Many expect the contest between Biden and Trump to be even closer in 2024. If it is, and Kennedy can manage to win a solid number of electoral votes, then what? No, he's not going to win any. But regardless, no one gets to 270 in the House of Representatives voting on behalf of the 50 states is entrusted to pick the next president. What could possibly go wrong with that constitutionally mandated solution? Nothing. That's the answer to that question. What could possibly go wrong? Nothing. Buckle up, he says. Oh, yeah, this is so scary. What could go wrong if the states pick the president? Absolutely nothing. Because in reality, that's what's supposed to happen anyways. Now, if we had a system where, you know, we voted by congressional district, the Electoral College vote went by district, that would be interesting. But we don't do that. We have winner take all. So the states were designed to do this anyways. You go back and look, and this is how it worked. What could go wrong? We could have a real discussion about federalism. In fact, nothing would go wrong. It would be a beautiful expression and final nail in the coffin, maybe, of nationalism. I don't think it would be, but regardless, people would actually be talking about federalism again. It would be beautiful should this happen. We'd get the states doing what states are supposed to do. It would show that the states are the building blocks of the entire system and the general government is just their servant. The states are the master. See you next time on the Brian McClanahan Show. See you then.